This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast.
And we're up to segment number three in our continuous coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill. Let's go to the courtroom.
All right, we're back on the record on KCR 22-21-1624, State of Idaho versus Lori Noreen Vallow. Completed the lunch break. Jurors are all present and accounted for. Detective Kaya Kamanu is on the stand still. I'll remind the witness you're under oath. And the state is continuing its direct examination, I believe, at this time.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Blake, if you'd like to continue with direct, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Detective Kaya Kamanu, we had talked about some guns that were retrieved from the apartment complex where Alex Cox was residing. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And one gun in particular seemed to draw the most attention from you. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what type of firearm was that again?
That was the Alexander Arms Grendel 6.5.
And do you believe if you were shown that firearm again, you would recognize it?
Yes.
Your Honor, I believe that we do have the firearm here. If we could have it brought into the courtroom, I believe it's State's Exhibit 280.
Exhibit 280?
I believe it's 280.
All right.
I'll make sure to have the detective properly identify it to make sure I have the correct exhibit number.
All right. We'll have the firearm brought into the courtroom. As we're doing that, let me just advise you, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, any firearms that are offered into evidence in the case, we'll make sure are unloaded. There's no ammunition anywhere in the courtroom for any firearms that would be admitted into evidence. The firearms have also, steps have been taken to render them inoperable. I'll have the bailiff explain that a little bit more once the firearms brought in here. The firearms will not be handled at any point by the jurors, either during trial or during deliberations, but may be available for inspection with the assistance of law enforcement. And with that in mind, we'll have the law enforcement bring in the firearm that would be State's Exhibit 280.
And, Your Honor, I believe there may be two more items with that, and I can get those exhibit numbers.
Okay.
And, Your Honor, may the witness leave the stand to review those items, or do you want them handed to him?
I think it'd be best if he did step down and just personally review the items and then can return to the stand for foundational questions. So, Detective, if you'd like to step down, you can go ahead and observe the items there on the table.
And there are three items there. I believe the other two are going to be State's Exhibits 278 and 279, but I will have the detective identify those first, what they are.
All right. So the gun itself is 280, is that correct?
Is that in fact the AR-15?
This is the Grendel 6.5.
And I can have him say that into the mic if the court would like, but yes, so that would be Exhibit 280.
Okay.
And what did you identify that firearm as?
So that firearm right there is the Alexander Arms Grendel 6.5 with a Vortex scope on it.
And did you see the other item sitting next to it?
I did.
And could you identify what those are?
Those are solvent traps that were drilled into to make a homemade suppressor.
Were those also recovered during the search of the apartment complex associated with Alex Cox?
They were.
And were those seized by Fremont County?
They were first seized by Rexburg PD for safekeeping, and then Fremont County seized them on a search warrant, yes.
And they have remained in the custody of Fremont County?
Yes.
And is that, in fact, the firearm that we saw in a photo earlier?
Yes.
And again, you went over your experience with paintball guns and your experience with AR-15s. And I don't know if the witness could step down to point out some things with regard to that firearm, or if we'd like it held up for him to do that.
Let's get to the detail of getting these admitted into evidence.
Your Honor, given the identification by the detective, the state would move for their admission.
All right. Any objection to Exhibit 280, which is the gun?
If I may voir dire and aid.
You can voir dire.
Detective, this is the gun that's in the cardboard box, correct, that you seized from Alex Cox's apartment?
That was seized from Alex Cox's apartment.
All right, and you know that to be the gun that was seized from his apartment. I guess what I'm saying is you weren't there when it was seized?
Correct, I was not there.
All right, but based on your collective knowledge within the police department, you believe that to be the same gun that was seized from Alex's apartment?
Correct.
All right, and you identified States 278 and 279 as being, I couldn't really hear what you called them.
Baffles or solvent traps?
Baffles or solvent traps. Okay, what is that?
From my knowledge, a baffle is a device that could be used to make suppressors for a firearm.
Is it just a piece of metal?
From my understanding, yes.
Okay. So those are just two pieces of metal that you found in with or near the gun that was seized at the house?
Correct.
Okay. I have no objection, Judge.
Okay. So Exhibits 280 and 278 and 279 are all admitted. And so, Ms. Blake, you can continue with your direct.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I don't know if there's a mic or a way for the detective to be able to step down to identify some things with regard to that firearm for the jury.
We'll get him a wireless mic.
Thank you, Your Honor. And while we're waiting for that, you talked about those pieces of metal. Would those also be referred to as silencers?
Correct.
In common lingo?
Yeah, they could be.
And if you could step down and approach that Exhibit 280. And you had described earlier your experience with paintball guns and the AR-15s, correct?
Correct.
When you're looking at that, you talked about a hopper on a paintball gun and something on an AR that could look similar. Does this AR, in fact, have what you were referring to?
Yes, this grindle has a scope on it, a Vortex scope, which is a very large scope that could be construed as a hopper.
And in your experience on the paintball guns you've used, is that where the hopper is located on a paintball gun?
The hopper on a paintball gun can sometimes come off of the side of the gun and come right up to on top of the rail.
And in your experience, some of the paintball guns you've used, can they be approximately the same size as that firearm?
Yes.
And, Your Honor, I would ask permission for the detective or someone to hold that up to display it for the jurors and then have those that scope pointed out again to make sure that they can observe it.
All right. I'd ask Deputy Ravello if you would assist in that, please.
And Detective Kaikamanu, if you could just go over and point again where you were saying that scope is to make sure the jurors can see it.
Again, right here is the Vortex scope that comes down on the top of the rail of the rifle.
And if you could describe again where the hopper is sometimes located on paintball guns you have experience using.
Before we answer, Mr. Thomas, would you like to go where you can observe what's being pointed out?
Thanks, Judge.
All right.
And, Your Honor, would you like me to have him point out that scope again once Mr. Thomas is there?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Blake.
So now that Mr. Thomas, can you see? Detective Kaikamanu, can you once again point out where that scope is that you're referencing?
So again, the Vortex scope is on the top of the rail of the rifle.
And in your experience working with paintball guns, can you indicate again where the hopper is located?
On a paintball gun, paintball gun comes out the side and comes up right above the rail of the paintball gun.
And in your experience, can a paintball gun resemble an AR-15?
Yes.
Just one moment. And I don't have any additional questions at this time, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Blake. Go ahead and just have the exhibit set down on the table there. Thank you, Mr. Bailiff. All right, Mr. Thomas, cross-examination.
Detective, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. You indicate that you've worked for Fremont County for a number of years. How many years was that?
18.
18. And how long was a detective?
7.
And you indicate that you're a lieutenant over the detectives at this time?
Sergeant over detectives.
Sergeant. And how long have you been the sergeant over the detectives?
Approximately a year and a half.
Okay. So you were just a regular detective, and now you're the sergeant over the detectives. Is that right?
Correct.
There hasn't been any move back to patrol or back to another capacity in the sheriff's office in the last 7 years? You've been in the detective's division?
Correct.
Okay. All right. You indicated that you had some special training. You went to post. Did you go to college anywhere before post? Or
I did not.
Okay. So the first thing that Ms. Blake had you talk about was the October 19th incident where Ms. Daybell had passed away. On that particular day, you said that you were the on-call detective, is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So, and how many detectives do you have in your division?
At that time, we had myself and one other detective.
And that was?
Detective Mattingly.
Mattingly. And then Greenhalgh was not a detective?
Correct. She was not.
So it's you and Mattingly are detectives on October 19, 2019. So you switch off between being on call for that, is that how it works?
Correct.
Okay. And so you're on call that night. You get a call from Greenhalgh, but you don't answer it because you're asleep or something else is going on. Is that right?
Correct.
All right. And so she talks to Detective Mattingly, but you still go out to the scene later that morning?
Negative. I didn't go out to the scene.
Okay. So Greenhalgh was at the scene, Mattingly was at the scene, and then there were two coroners at the scene?
There was two coroners at the scene, Deputy Greenhalgh, and I do not believe Detective Mattingly went to the scene.
Oh, he didn't go to the scene either?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay. But you somehow got in touch with Greenhalgh or Mattingly and talked about whether or not there needed to be further investigation, is that right?
Correct.
You were asking about suspicious circumstances?
Correct.
And there was nothing out of the ordinary about the death at that time?
Not that I was informed of.
Okay. And who else did you talk to besides Greenhalgh? Did you talk to Mattingly?
That same day?
Yeah.
I did not.
Okay. So you only talked to Greenhalgh?
Correct.
Did you talk to either of the coroners?
I did not.
Okay. So based on that, were you the one that made the call that there wasn't going to be any follow-up investigation on that?
I was not.
Who was the one who made that call?
I believe it was Detective Mattingly and the coroners.
Okay. So Mattingly didn't go out to the scene. Were you the sergeant over? Were you in charge, the head guy, at that time or no?
At the time, I was not a sergeant, no.
Okay. Who was the sergeant over you guys?
We didn't have a sergeant at the time. It was Lieutenant Powell that was over the detective division.
Okay. And did either of you go to Lieutenant Powell and chat with him about this at all? On that particular day, October 19th.
I believe Detective Mattingly spoke with Lieutenant Powell. I am not aware of what was said in that conversation.
Okay, all right. But then you indicate that a couple weeks later you got involved with, or the Fremont County Sheriff's Office got involved with the Tammy's death, right?
Correct.
And you got involved in March of 2020.
Yeah, around that time.
Okay. Yes. The state said that this was some sort of a joint investigation between, because it involved an investigation of Brandon Bedreau, the two missing kids, as well as Charles Vallow. Is that right?
Correct.
And when you say joint investigation, what is your understanding of what a joint investigation is?
My understanding of a joint investigation is criminal activity that's happened over several jurisdictions and states, and that's when we get involved if something happened in our jurisdiction.
And I probably phrased it poorly. Let me just ask you this. When I say joint investigation and you say, yeah, we were involved in a joint investigation, what kind of sharing of information goes on? I mean, are you fully involved? Are you not very involved? How does that work?
At the time when Fremont County got involved, we were asked to locate a Jeep out of Texas, or the plate out of a Texas. That Jeep belonged to Tylee Ryan, and she had gone missing. That is, I believe, when Lieutenant Powell got that call. And that's how we got involved.
Okay. And how about when you got involved?
When I got involved, it was already underway with the attempted shooting of Brandon Boudreaux, the homicide on Charles Vallow, Tylee and JJ missing, and then the suspicious death into Tammy Daybell.
Okay. And so you were part of that joint investigation starting in March of 2020, correct?
Correct.
All right. So were you in the know about the investigation of the Brandon Boudreaux shooting?
I was aware of it, yes.
Okay. And are you aware if they were able to find any shell casings or any bullets or anything like that?
I don't believe they did, but I can't say yes or no on that.
Okay. And that's kind of where I was going with the joint investigation. How much did you know about what other jurisdictions knew? So that's kind of where I'm going with my questions for you. So you didn't know if they found any bullets or any casings or anything like that in the Brandon Bedreau investigation?
Correct.
All right. And then you started investigating the attempted shooting of Tammy Daybell. Were you the point man on that?
I didn't investigate that. I looked into that report, and no, I was not the point deputy on that case.
Who was the point on that case?
Deputy Coulter Cannon.
Okay. All right. So when you say you looked into it, what do you mean you looked into it?
When I got involved on Tamara Daybell's death, I had figured out that previous we got a call for an attempted shooting at that residence. And so that's when I read his report and started looking into it that way.
So you read Coulter Cannon's report?
Correct.
Okay. And then there was an email that was circulated and that was actually brought into evidence. You recall that this morning?
If you're referring to the one that Tammy wrote to Mark, then yes.
Yes, I'm referring to Exhibit 291. Can I take a look at 291, please? Thank you. Your Honor, can I publish parts of 291?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So this... So this is the first page of 291. You recall reading from the bottom of that page earlier?
Yes.
Okay. And you basically just referenced who it was to and who it was from, right?
Correct.
But you reviewed the entire email, right?
Correct.
All right. But and the email is three pages long, is that right?
I would have to look at it again.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. So this first page really doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about or what we're here for today, correct?
Correct.
All right. What does it have to do with? Did you even recall?
She had emailed several people. This one looks like it's emailed to Shirley Newman. They talk about a lot of church stuff. She goes back and forth. She emails several people on all that.
Okay. And I guess I'm wondering, how is it that the stuff that's really pertinent got put onto this particular email?
That I cannot answer.
Okay. So now I'm flipping to page 2. And what is that email? What is that portion of the email about?
So the beginning of this portion of the email, Tammy is talking about how her neighbor's dog was out and somebody drove by and took her neighbor's dog.
Stole the dog.
And Mrs. Price got in her vehicle, chased the person who stole her dog down and confronted her, got her dog back, and then went into labor.
And that portion of the email about stealing the dog actually becomes pertinent to this investigation, doesn't it?
I wouldn't say pertinent.
Okay. What would you call it?
I would just say it was part of an email that she wrote to Mark on what was happening on the events of that day.
Okay. Let's turn to the last page of this email. So the last page of this email, the first full paragraph, starting with his theory. Do you know who he is when they're talking about his theory?
She is referring to Mr. Price.
All right. And Mr. Price is referenced in the line just above it, right?
Correct.
All right. And that's how you know that it's Mr. Price?
Correct.
All right. Would you go ahead and read that paragraph for me?
His theory is that the crazy dog lady brought her husband back to steal the dog again. They had parked down the road, and he had snuck through the cow fields. He was going to cut through the front yard when I pulled up and startled him. He didn't know what to do, so he panicked and tried to menace me with the non-real gun, and then ran off across the field, which would explain why he ran to the north side of the house and why I never heard a car and we couldn't find anyone or him anywhere. It's actually a pretty good theory, and Matt is going to do some amateur sleuthing since the lady told Regan where she lives. I'll keep you posted if we ever figure anything else out.
Okay. And so when you followed up with this and you talked to Matt or talked to Regan, what did you find out?
That's what was happening, and that was his theory.
And when you talk to the guy, the lady that stole the dog, when you talk to her husband, what did he have to say?
I didn't talk to him.
You didn't follow up on this lead?
I did not.
You didn't think it was a credible lead?
I did not.
Okay. In fact, you... let's ask this. I want to jump the gun here. So I'm turning back to page 2. And let's read the first full paragraph from the bottom. It starts, "I think I was a bit in shock." Can you read that for me?
What paragraph?
Just above. It starts out with, "I think I was in a bit of." I think I was a bit in shock.
I think I was a bit in shock because I said, "What do you think you were doing?" Then I noticed a rifle was actually a paintball gun. It had a hopper on it. The guy started pulling the trigger, and I could just hear the clicking and whooshing sound of an empty paintball gun. He stayed standing by the back of the car, just pulling the trigger while pointing the gun at me. For some reason, I just kept asking him what he thought he was doing. At that point, I was actually more annoyed than scared because he was standing between me and the door. And he didn't step towards me or even say anything. The scared part came after when my brain thought of what things could have happened.
Okay. So, let's take this a little bit at a time here. She's talking to the man, right? This is what she says in her email. "What do you think you're doing?" Right? Okay. So she identifies that he's close enough to her to at least have a conversation. Did you follow up with how far she was from this person?
Again, I didn't do the investigation at this point when this call came out, so no, I did not.
Okay. But you said you followed up on stuff.
Correct.
This isn't one of the things you followed up on?
I did not have a chance to talk to Tamara Daybell by the time I got this case.
Okay. And it says the guy started pulling the trigger, and I could just hear clicking and whooshing sound of an empty paintball gun, right?
Correct.
All right. So when you fire an AR-15, or I'm not sure if this is an AR-15. Is this an AR-15?
This is an Alexander Grendel 6.5.
Right. And for the normal person like me who doesn't have assault rifles, is this considered an assault rifle?
It's on an assault rifle platform, yes.
Okay. So it's an AR, just not an AR-15. It would be an AR Grendel 6?
Correct. 6.5.
Okay. 6.5. Sorry. Okay. So when firing, have you ever fired one of these?
Not Grendel 6.5. No, I have not.
Okay. So you don't know what they sound like when they're fired?
I do not.
Okay. Do you have experience with other assault rifles, though, correct?
Correct.
Some that are similar to this?
Correct.
Okay. Do they make a whooshing sound when they're fired?
If you were to have a suppressor on it, and depending on what size of bullet, it wouldn't make a whooshing sound, but it'd be very quiet.
Okay. So when you say what type of bullet, you'd have to actually have a subsonic type of bullet, right?
Correct.
Something that is a specialized bullet specifically for guns that you put suppressors on, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And where do you get that ammunition?
I am not sure if you can buy it. Usually people make it.
Okay.
Reload.
Okay. And did you find any reloading equipment or any of this type of subsonic things that are subsonic type ammunition in Alex Cox's apartment?
In Alex Cox's belonging, there were some reloading equipment, not a full setup, but there were some.
Okay. You didn't find any subsonic bullets or subsonic casings?
I did not.
Okay. Would you hear the click and the whoosh if you were to fire that with a suppressor on it?
Again, it depends on the caliber that's going through. Maybe a malfunction, you'd hear a click. But other than that, that's about it.
Right. But if you hear the click, you wouldn't hear the whoosh, right?
Correct.
So you'd either hear a click or a whoosh.
Possibly, yes.
Okay. But generally not both.
Generally not both, yes.
Okay. And when this type of a firearm is fired, where does the casing go? It ejects, is that correct?
Correct.
All right. And it would go somewhere in the general area of where the person who shot it, probably within 6 feet, I'm assuming?
Possibly. I'm not sure of the trajectory, but, yeah, possibly, unless they had a malfunction and the casing stayed inside the rifle.
Well, if they had a malfunction and the casing stayed inside the rifle, you wouldn't hear any more clicks and any more whooshing, right?
You would hear a click.
But no whooshing?
No whooshing.
Okay. And so, did you later go out to the scene of this particular event and with a metal detector try to find some sort of casings or bullets or anything?
I did not go out there. I do know that there was a warrant for that residence, and at that time, several other deputies and officers did do that with metal detectors and tried to locate a casing.
Okay. Did they find anything?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. When you looked around, you obviously looked around the property, right, where this bullet would have, the trajectory that it would have gone to?
Again, I was not out there.
Okay. To your knowledge, did anybody find any bullet holes in any buildings or any of the houses or cars or anything nearby?
To my knowledge, no.
Okay. But you guys looked?
Correct.
Okay. All right, so let's read, starting with this last paragraph on that page. It's three lines long, and then we'll read the remainder of that paragraph on the next page. Can you go ahead and do that for me?
The thought crossed my mind to hit him with my clogging shoes, but first I looked towards the house and yelled, "Chad." The guy ran off around the north side of the house. I ran in the house and got Dad and Garth. They looked outside, but we couldn't find him. We called the police and reported it. They suspect it was a bipolar teenager who lives down the street and walks around a lot. But Matt Price has a better theory.
All right. And so the suspect, they thought, was a person who was a bipolar teenager who lives down the street and walks around a lot. Is that right?
Correct.
All right. And did you check into that bipolar teenager?
We talked to several individuals around the area about the bipolar is what they put there, the bipolar teenager. And in fact, found out he had autism, and he lived a lot further away from the Daybell residence than what would have been in walking distance.
Okay. And I don't want to drag an autistic child into this, but did you end up talking to the autistic child?
I did not.
Okay. So no further follow-up was done on the suspected bipolar teenage child?
No.
Okay. So of all the people mentioned in here that it could be, you really didn't follow up talking to any of those people that were mentioned in here?
We talked to Matt and Regan Price.
Right, but they weren't suspected of shooting Tammy, right?
No, that was Matt's theory.
Okay. But the people that were suspected, the theories or the people that were suspected of doing this, you didn't talk to any of them?
Correct.
Okay. So through your investigation, you did some, and I'm sorry, I'm done with this exhibit. Thank you. I would like to now see 107B. So we've already established that there is a gun that you found in Alex Cox's possession, correct?
Rexburg PD found that, yes.
I'm sorry. When I say you, I guess I mean collectively the joint investigation?
Correct.
Okay. So I'd like to turn to this second page. And this is a lot harder than it looks, getting this thing stabilized. I was, you know, all right. So we've established that we you found, or somebody found, a Grendel 6.5. Does anybody know when that gun was purchased?
I don't have that. In the investigation, I believe our guys have looked into that and do know.
So somebody knows, but you don't?
Correct.
Okay, do you know who might know?
I believe Detective Consitis or FBI agent Douglas.
Okay, and they ran the serial number off the gun?
That I am not sure.
Okay, is that, I'm just asking because I don't know. Is that how you would generally do it, is run the serial number?
Usually when we collect guns, yes, we run all the serial numbers. I do not know if they did.
Okay, and that's generally to see if they're stolen or something like that?
Correct.
And how would you find the purchase? And I, again, I've never bought a gun, so I don't really know, but when you purchase a gun, I'm assuming they have to do something with that serial number or no? Do you know?
What do you mean by doing something to it?
Well, when somebody sells me something, I get a receipt for it, but do we have to register the gun in some way, or is it just only if it comes up stolen, is that when they put it in the system?
When you purchase a firearm, they'll associate that serial number to whoever purchased it.
Okay.
So that's how that's done.
Okay. And so that's how you track, that's how you're assuming that maybe Detective Consitis found that out?
Along with receipts.
Okay. So would it be out of the ordinary for someone to search, if they bought a gun like that, to make searches like 6.5 Grendel drop from 100 yards to 200 yards, if they owned a 6.5 Grendel?
It would depend what they're shooting it for.
Okay. What would you shoot that particular gun for?
Usually long range.
Okay. Hunting?
Depends. I wouldn't purchase that firearm for hunting.
Right. It's only for just for target practice or for guys to be machismo and, hey, I got a big gun, right?
Correct.
Okay. So if you go to the range, are you going to want to know what, and maybe let me just ask you this because I'm not really sure about it either. 6.5 Grendel drop from 100 yards to 200 yards. What does that mean?
So the further you're back in yardage in shooting, your bullet's going to drop a little bit. And so with your scope is you need to dial that in. So you shoot to get it accurate from several different yards, different 100 yards, so you can be accurate at one. And mm-hmm. usually when you get that sighted in, you kind of stay at that yardage for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when you say that the bullet is going to drop, it's due to gravity, it's due to drift, it's due to wind, those kinds of things, right?
Correct.
All right. And so if you're target practicing, you're going to want to be on target, am I right?
Correct.
And the way to know that is to go through the internet, make these searches, find those kinds of things. Is that one way to do it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Another way would be to find somebody who has one of these, and you can talk to them, and they can, you know, you can form a club or whatever and be buddy-buddy and work it out that way, right?
Yes.
But if you're new to the area, one of the best ways to do that is to get online, right?
Correct.
All right. And these Google searches that were done on October the 10th, the reason that you did a summary is because what the state reported or what they told the court was, because there was voluminous information, and just to kind of square down and pack down what your pertinent ones were, right?
That's not why I looked these specific dates over, no.
Okay. But what you found on these specific dates, these are not the only searches that were done on those particular dates.
Correct.
All right. There were some searches that you didn't put on here.
On the Google search itself, like this says up at top, these were the Google searches of those of that day of this information.
All the Google searches?
Yes.
Every search that he did on that day is on this piece of paper.
There were some other searches as far as, if you'd like me to go in that, I can.
Yeah, tell me everything that was on that day. Every
there were
search
other
from
searches
midnight.
Of...
Talking over the top of each other.
Okay. Starting from midnight, tell me every search that was on October the 10th, 2019, that came off of this Google account.
I'm not sure starting at midnight, but there were several searches of trannies. There were several searches of pornography that I didn't think was pertinent to this slide to bring in today.
Okay. So what you're saying is there are a lot of other things that were on this Google search that was done throughout the day rather than these particular searches that you made.
Correct.
Okay. So I guess what I'm saying is we're not trying to mislead the jury to say, hey, this guy is a gun nut and he's looking at this specific things all day long. This is all he's doing. There's a lot of other things he was doing.
Correct.
All right. Same thing on this slide, October the 12th, 2019. These are not the only searches that were done on October the 12th, 2019, correct?
Correct.
There were a lot of other searches.
Similar to what I just mentioned.
All right. There's a lot of other things going on, right?
Correct.
All right. Okay, on this particular slide... I don't know that you know this. You probably shouldn't know this because we had another person who testified, and he actually showed what searches or what who had signed in on every single day. And these were long sheets of paper, correct? Like a full sheet of paper. There were other people's names on these, right?
Yes.
All right, and that's where you got the information on this particular slide was from those sign-in sheets, right?
Yes.
All right. And so when you went to Fremont County Sportsman's Club, who did you talk to when you went there?
That was Lieutenant Powell that got this information. And
okay. So this isn't your information?
This is not my information that I retrieved, no.
So somebody else made this slide for you?
No, I made this slide with our prosecutors, but the information was from another report. Again, it goes back to a joint investigation that we have shared information and put everything together.
Okay. And who was it that did this particular investigation?
When Lieutenant Powell was first started on the investigation, he retrieved this information. When I took over the investigation, he was no longer part of the investigation, so I took over that information.
Okay. And in the information that he gave to you, There's a report that indicated that he had actually talked to people at the Fremont Sportsman's Club.
He talked to Les Ball, who is on the, he's the president of the board.
Okay.
Of the Sportsman's Association.
All right. And did you or anybody that you know actually go out to the Sportsman Club and investigate anybody that was on any of those sheets?
Anybody else that was on the names?
Any of the names that were on the sheets of paper on the days that you're alleging that Alex Cox was there with the name of C. Quint?
Not to my knowledge, no.
So you didn't do any investigation? Nobody did any investigation as to who else was there? Who might have seen Alex Cox there?
No.
Okay. So based on the totality of what we were looking at, you're saying that you didn't investigate and you don't know who investigated the autistic boy or bipolar teenager, and you didn't investigate, or you don't know that anybody investigated the person, the husband who stole the dog, and nobody went out and talked to anybody at the shooting range who may have seen Alex Cox on that day, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, when you did the investigation with regards to the geofence, you did a geofence warrant for two different locations, 202 North, 1900 East, and that's Chad's house, correct?
Correct.
And you also did 3462 North Salem Highway, and that's the church that's about 2.7 miles from Chad's house?
2.6.
2.6 miles?
Correct.
Okay. And you did a geofence of 150 meter perimeter, is that right?
Correct.
So how does that work? Does that, do you go from the center of the property 150 yards in either direction or 150 yards total?
It's in the center of the property 150 yards all the way around in a circle.
So 150 yards in any direction?
150 meters, yes.
I'm sorry, 150 meters. And a meter is roughly a yard, right?
Roughly, but we'll stick with meters.
Okay. Meter is 3.3 feet, right?
That I am not sure off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, I dove in college, and I'm telling you it's 3.3 feet. Would that be accurate? But
objection, Your Honor. Defense is trying to introduce testimony, not in evidence.
Sustained.
Okay. All right. So we'll say meters, okay, for whatever it's worth. 150 meters. Do you know how far 150 meters is if you were standing at one end of a football field?
I do not.
Okay. You have no idea?
No idea.
Not even a clue?
I just said no.
Okay. All right. Do you know how many feet 150 meters is?
I do not.
Didn't bother to check to see how far it was?
Objection, Your Honor. Relevance. I think the detective already testified to the distance within the warrant.
Asked and answered.
Okay, Judge. So 150 meters, you indicated that you thought that Chad Daybell's phone, or I'm sorry, not Chad Daybell's phone, Alex Cox's phone was in the church parking lot within 150 meters.
I testified to a device that was associated with Alex Cox's Homer J. Maximus was pinging in the vicinity of the church.
Within 150 meters?
Within the 150 meters of my geofence location.
Okay. And did you get specific, anything more specific than somewhere within 150 meters?
I guess I don't understand that question.
Okay. You have a geofence location, which is a large circle, right?
Correct.
I'm just going to guess. And then you have a pinpoint in the middle of that circle, which would be the dot where everything is focused on, right?
Correct.
Okay. So is there anything within that larger circle, can you pinpoint in any particular direction or any particular area where this Homer J. Maximus phone was located, or was it the only information you got was it was somewhere within the 150-meter range?
It was showing Wi-Fi hits off the backside of the church.
Okay. Okay, and that's what you got was the Wi-Fi hits?
Correct.
And the Wi-Fi hits came from somebody else's house?
Correct.
Can I have you walk over and pick up 278 or 279, actually both of them?
And, Your Honor, I don't know if he's going to have him walk back to the stand or if we need the handheld mic again.
Well, 278 and 279 can just be delivered to him on the stand.
That's fine, Judge.
Okay. You can return to your seat. Thanks.
And I apologize for the interruption. Just wanted to clarify that.
That's fine, Ms. Blake. Thank you.
So I think you testified earlier that 278 and 279 were, I forgot what you call them now.
Baffles.
Baffles. Okay. So when I said baffle is just a chunk of metal, is that right? Is that what you're looking at?
From my understanding, yes.
Okay. Is there anything that, I mean, it's a round piece of metal, right? It's circular, kind of like a tube?
Yes.
And it's solid?
Yes.
All right. And there's not been any drill holes in it or anything like that?
There's a drill hole on both ends.
Okay. And does it go all the way through?
No.
Okay. So it couldn't be used as a suppressor. It would actually blow the gun up, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Nothing further.
All right, let's have the exhibits returned to the table there, please. Thank you, Mr. Bailiff. Redirect.
Thank you, Your Honor. Detective Caicamano, you were asked about whether or not anyone else responded out on the morning of October 19th, 2019, besides the deputy and the two individuals from the coroner's office, correct?
Correct.
And to the best of your knowledge, did any detectives respond out that morning?
No, they did not.
Do you know why that was?
When I called the coroner back after I missed her call approximately an hour later, she had told me that she had already talked to Detective Mattingly and had walked through everything with Detective Mattingly. After that conversation, I also asked Deputy Greenhalgh, again, if anything was out of the ordinary, any forced entry, anything sticking out to her. I was not made aware of anything. I also asked her if the coroner saw anything that was different or out of the ordinary, she told me no.
And on October 19th of 2019, were you aware of or had you heard of J.J. Vallow?
Of October 19th?
Yes, prior to Fremont County becoming involved, had you heard of J.J. Vallow?
Yes.
And did you hear of J.J. Vallow before you became involved in the investigation?
I did.
Did you hear of him prior to the end of October?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to object. These questions are all beyond the scope of cross-examination. I didn't talk anything about J.J. Vallow.
I'll overrule that at this point, Ms. Blake, but it's getting close to beyond the scope, I would say.
On October 19th of 2019, were you, actually I'll back up, you testified that you did not become involved in an investigation regarding the death of Tammy Daybell until 2020, is that correct?
Correct.
I think you also testified in response to Cross that when Fremont became involved, they were assisting or looking for a Jeep?
Correct.
Do you know if that Jeep was reported to have been involved in or suspected in criminal activity?
I believe it was.
And do you know where that criminal activity would have occurred?
In Gilbert, Arizona.
Was Fremont County in... And do you know when that request was made, or approximately when?
I can't think of it off the top of my head. I would have to refer.
I think you testified previously Fremont County did not become involved in a joint investigation until the end of October of 2019.
Correct.
And that was after the death of Tamara Daybell?
Correct.
So on the morning she died, to the best of your knowledge, did Fremont County have all of the information regarding those other investigations?
They did not have all the information, no.
You were asked about why there was some other information on that email that you were looking at?
Yes.
And at the bottom of that first page, you'd read off the sender, the person it was sent to, and a date. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then the body of that actual email started on the next page. Is that correct?
Correct.
So with the phone extraction, would there have been remnants of a prior email?
Yes.
And that's what was contained on the first page?
Yes.
And you were asked a lot about the contents of that email, specifically mention of a bipolar teen.
Correct.
Did that seem plausible to you?
No.
What about a dog thief or her husband? Did that seem like a plausible suspect?
No.
The Daybell residence, can you describe the area where it's located? Is it a city? Is it rural?
So the Daybell residence is at 202 North, 1900 East, at a crossroads, which is a rural area in a farm community. On the east side of their house and the northeast side of their house is just open field for several hundred yards. It's a farming area, and it's very open.
Do you get a lot of reports of masked gunmen in that area?
No.
Do you know, I believe in that email from Tammy, she referenced that this had happened at night, this attempted shooting?
Correct.
Where this house is located, are there street lights or city lights?
No. At the time of the attempted shooting on Tamara Daybell, there was a blinking yellow light, but that would have been the only light around the area.
And you talked earlier about some location data in relation to a device associated with Alex Cox. Was that device in the area of the Daybell residence earlier that day on October 9th of 2019?
The Homer J. Maximus, a device associated with that, yes, there was.
And are you aware of one of the roads that runs by the Daybell residence? I think their house sits at an intersection, is that correct?
Correct.
And one of the roads is the Salem Highway.
Yes, one's the known as the Salem Highway or 1900 East, and the one that crosses that is 200 North.
And on that 200 North, are you aware or familiar with some kind of a pullout for a canal?
I am.
Judge, we're not talking about that. We're going far afield.
I'll sustain that. I think it's beyond the scope, Ms. Blake.
Your Honor, the detective was asked a lot about why he didn't follow up on certain leads. I think this goes directly to that, so I think it is within the bounds of the cross.
Of the direct you did, it's beyond the scope and with the cross as well, so I will sustain the objection, Ms. Blake.
With this particular gun that we've talked a lot about, can you tell by looking at it if it is threaded for a silencer or a suppressor?
By looking at it, yes, you can put a suppressor on there.
If you put a suppressor on a firearm in your experience, can it change the sounds?
Yes.
When you conduct an investigation, do you go where the evidence leads you?
Yes.
Is that what you did in this case?
Yes.
And is that, in fact, why you were looking at searches associated with Homer J. Maximus?
Yes.
And is that, in fact, why you looked at shooting range logs, specifically looking for anyone or an identifier associated with Alex Cox?
Yes.
You were asked by defense if you had a chance to talk to Tammy about the paintball gun incident. You responded you did not.
Correct.
Is that because she was killed 9 to 10 days later?
That is correct.
I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. That'll conclude the testimony of Detective Kai Kamanu. I believe he'll continue to be made available to the state. Is that correct?
We would actually ask that he be released.
Okay.
No objection.
All right. Thank you for your testimony today. Counsel, could I have a brief sidebar before we call another witness?
That wraps up segment number 3 in our continuous coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. There's much more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it.
This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage. Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast.